My prayer all morning has been, please don't let me say anything that ends with an R or has an M, because everybody's going to go, and then I'm going to forget completely what it was I needed to say. So first I'm going to share with you a journey, and this journey began with a phone call from Brad, and then an email from Barb, and then an email from Ken, and then a phone call from this beautiful Ruta. And what a joy. And I mean, to get from Texas to Arizona, it's quite a journey, but it was worth every minute. I'm so grateful to be here. My name is Stephanie Butler, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Stephanie.
There, my time's up. I'm just, I love being here. I love everything about it. First of all, I love that I got to meet Tammy and Patrick last night, had not met them. I get to reconnect with Bruce and Hector, and we've been together before. And then it's this beautiful, beautiful piece of God's country right here. And I see God's love, not only in the nature of the beautiful trees and the fresh air, but in your faces. There is so much love and acceptance. And I have just felt like the journey from Texas to Alaska was wonderful. I live in a little bitty town called Granite Shoals, which is about an hour west of Austin and an hour north of San Antonio. And we've got like 4,000 people. And we have two stoplights, one at the beginning of town and one at the end of town. Main Street, one Main Street. And it's a little poor community. But we don't have recovery in that community. There's a lot of Hispanics, and we've been trying to get the Hispanic group started. My home group is in Marble Falls, which is about 20 minutes from my home. And my home group is one day at a time. We meet at 7:30 on Monday nights. And if you're ever in that area, please come. We would welcome you with open arms. And so I'm grateful. Now I want to tell you about the big journey. The one I have been on started 70 years ago. I was born in Midland, Texas. That was great, you know. Not really. You know, there's two places in Texas. One of them's Midland and one of them's Odessa. And really, there is not a tree. It's flat. And I mean, the dirt just rolls through town. Even when the wind's not blowing, it just happens. But you know what? You will never find a space filled with more love in recovery than Midland, Texas. It really is. Now, that wasn't what happened 70 years ago. 70 years ago, I was born the oldest of three into a Catholic Italian family. Exactly. Let's go ahead. That's the sickness right there. Just... You know, and shortly after I was born, we moved to San Antonio, Texas, and that's where I grew up. So I thought that I was raised in a perfectly beautiful, loving, kind family. Now, the oldest in a Catholic Italian family, that's not all healthy, but at the time I thought it was. So when I came into the program, it was like, how in the world did I ever end up in Al-Anon? What is this about? And so they said, well, let's just look at some of the beliefs that you grew up with. One of the beliefs that I grew up with was, if you do good, you will get good. And if you do bad, you better hold on, because bad things are going to happen to you. I grew up afraid of a God. I had a punishing God, so I tried to not make any mistakes. I also grew up in a home where everything was fine. We were fine. How are you? We're fine. We're fine. We're fine. I saw my mama get mad at my daddy one time in the 18 years that I lived at home. She started crying. She walked out. She slammed the door. She got in the car and drove off. What I learned at a very early age was, when people get angry, they leave. So my people pleasing was put in place way early on. The other thing that was a belief of mine was that I looked at you and you looked so put together and I felt so less than. I was just never enough. Never enough. So when I saw the anger wasn't expressed, we were fine all the time. My mother had a sign that she put in our front yard that said, "We are fine. Thank you very much." You know, I've been in meetings enough to hear people being raised in rageful homes, and I know how damaging that is. I also need to tell you that I think it's very damaging to be raised in a home where none of your feelings are ever expressed or validated. You are fine all the time. So I'm a senior in high school, and I meet the man I fall in love with, and his name is Bill. Bill and I dated for 4.5 years, and after we graduated from college, we got married and we moved to Austin, Texas, and that's where we began our life together. And I would tell you, this is a really happy part of my journey. You know, I went to school, I graduated from college, I'm with the man that I love. I studied to be a teacher. That's all I ever wanted to do, was to teach school. So now I'm teaching school, and Bill and I are beginning our married life together, and it looks really pretty. And it is, except what happens now is that Bill travels for his company. And every once in a while he would call and he'd say, "Man, we just had a meeting around happy hour. We had so much fun." And then he'd call and say, "Guess what? They're serving free drinks on the plane." And I start watching Bill drink early on. And then he starts buying beer and putting it in the refrigerator. Well, let me tell you about my family of origin. My parents were social drinkers. They did not drink alcoholically. Now, my daddy was a workaholic. He held down 3 jobs to take care of us. And my mother was raised in an alcoholic home by an untreated Al-Anon. Now, I need for you to hear me say something. You hear people all the time say, "Well, she must be an Al-Anon because her behavior is a little bizarre." Well, she is an Al-Anon if she goes to meetings, gets a sponsor, reads the literature, and works the steps. She's an untreated Al-Anon if she just hangs out with alcoholics and it gets on her. And so my mama was raised by an untreated Al-Anon. Therefore, I was raised by an untreated Al-Anon. So I had, but the alcohol in the home, we had it for special occasions and that was it. So when Bill starts bringing home beer and put in the refrigerator, I don't understand. So I think it's my job. Count them. Remind him. You know? You've had 2 today. Don't you think that's enough? We had been married maybe a year, and I am already counting. I am already calculating. Are you sure? You know, and we'd go out somewhere, and he'd, you know, "Don't you want some wine?" And I'd go, "Why? No, why?" You know, "Well, let me drink your stuff." And so that happened a lot, you know. Or I'd leave the wine on the table, and he'd go, "You're walking off now?" You know, so, I mean, this was bringing up all sorts of red flags for me. It was because I'd never seen it before, and I didn't understand it. And so, anyway, after Bill and I had been married for 3 years, I became pregnant. And besides teaching school, what I wanted to do more than anything was to be a mommy. So I am really happy. So I need to tell you this little story. We were invited back to San Antonio for one of my cousin's Catholic Italian weddings. It's a Saturday morning, and we go to San Antonio. And I am 8 months pregnant, thrilled to death to be pregnant, thrilled to death to be, you know, everything's just wonderful. So it's a beautiful wedding. And then we have a reception with the champagne flowing, and everybody's having a great time. And then my cousin and his bride are going to fly to Hawaii for their honeymoon. So we all go to the airport to say goodbye. And we're standing at the airport, and we're waiting for the plane to leave. And I have different relatives coming up to me saying, "Your husband is the funniest thing." And I go, "Okay." And then somebody else comes up and says, "Bill has just kept us in stitches." And I go, "Okay." Now, the reason I was a little suspicious was because Bill was raised by a single mom as an only child. And you put him in these Catholic Italian gatherings, he's not a happy camper. So everybody keeps coming up saying, "Oh, I love Bill. He's so much fun." And I'm thinking, well, maybe he's getting with the program. You know, we've been married 3.5 years. Maybe he's finally catching on. And so he comes up to me after a while, and he says, "Steph, I'll be back in a minute." And he leaves, and I said, "Okay." So we wave goodbye to the newlyweds, and they fly off, and we're all standing at the airport, and we get ready to leave, and we can't find Bill. We have him paged. We go up and down the aisle. We go out to the car. There's no bill. And so we don't know what to do. Well, my brother-in-law comes up and he said, I found your husband. I said, you did? Where is he? He's passed out in the men's room. I went, oh my goodness, what happened? So we had to get an airport attendant to take the door off the hinges. And then we got a wheelchair. And they held him up while I buckled his britches. And then we put him in this wheelchair. And so my brother-in-law said, would you like for me to push the wheelchair? And I went, no, 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 he's my husband. I can push the wheelchair. So I am pushing the wheelchair. I'm 8 months pregnant. Butler's sliding out. We're shoving him back in again. And as we're walking out of the airport, my mom's walking beside me, and she says, I cannot believe your husband is drunk. I said, Mama, don't say that. Bless his little heart. If you ever hear me say bless his little heart, I am having an Al-Anon slip. I said, Mama, he is not drunk. He's just sick. She said, Stephanie, he is drunk. I said, Mama, stop saying that. He's just sick. Now, the reason I'm telling you that is because 19 years later, I am standing in a psychiatrist's office saying, do you think he could have a brain tumor? I'm pretty sure it's a brain tumor. Let's operate on that sucker, pull it out, and let us get on with the rest of our lives. In July of 1969, my denial was put in place. He is not drunk. He is just sick. I said that for 19 years. He's just drunk. I mean, he's just sick. He's not drunk. So anyway, the next month we have a beautiful daughter. Her name is Laura. I'm thrilled to death to have this beautiful girl. And 21 months later, we have our son. So I couldn't be happier. Thank you, God, I have two healthy children, and I get to be a stay-at-home mom. And so I'm just having a ball. Got this beautiful daughter, this great son, loving Bill. There's just this one little problem. I have a very distorted view of what love looks like. I believe that if you love somebody, you spend time with them. So every time Bill Butler went fishing, we all went fishing. And every time he went hunting, we all went hunting. And I mean, you know, and later he, you know, I thought, you know, if I had been him, I would have needed to drink too. And his drinking is escalating. That's what I know. I'm watching him and I'm counting him, and I don't like the way this is going. And my daughter, bless her heart, she was born angry. And I mean, then she'd say, no, I wasn't, Mom. I was fine till Wes was born. And so she starts breaking rules from the get-go. Wes is trying to get his insides filled up by the outsides, just like his mama. I had that sign in my front yard that said, we are fine, thank you very much. My husband's drinking. I'm counting the drinks. He's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. Laura's breaking the rules. I'm the best soccer mom you ever saw. I am, you know, I'm running up. I believe I have to, you know, it's my responsibility. I've got to count Bill's drinks. I've got to get Laura to behave, and I've got to tell Wes he's the greatest soccer player that ever ran on a field. Oh, I was so tired. But I wasn't through, because let me tell you what happens. We have a border collie. Oh, my gosh, the prettiest dog you ever saw in your life. Her name's Flopsy. Just love Flopsy. Flopsy gets pregnant, and it's time for Flopsy to have her puppies. And I wanted her to look good for delivery day. And so I shampooed Flopsy. And so then I remember that sometimes dogs run to dry, and sometimes you towel dry them, and I wanted to be sure I did it right. And so I look on the bottle, and it says, do not use on pregnant dogs. And I went, oh, my gosh. So I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, Dr. Pigott, well, look what I've done. And he said, well, Stephanie, it's about 2 weeks till the puppies are born. Let's see what happens. Sure enough, 2 weeks later, the first puppy was born, and it was born dead. And I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, I have killed this litter of puppies. He said, there's more. Let's just wait. Sure enough, about an hour later, another puppy was born, and it was okay. So I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, I didn't kill them all. We have a healthy puppy. And he said, well, that's great, Stephanie. About an hour later, another puppy was born, and it was okay. So I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, Dr. Pigott, we have two healthy puppies now. And he says, well, that's just great, Steph. And then throughout the course of that day, Flopsy had seven puppies. I called Dr. Pigott after every puppy. You know, the weight, I either burst them all or I killed them all. And so I would call him after each one. Well, the last puppy was born and had trouble breathing. And so I called Dr. Paget, what are we going to do? And he said, do you have any alcohol in your house? And I said, yes. And he says, well, take some alcohol, put it on the end of a spoon, put it in the puppy's mouth and massage it down the puppy's throat. It's going to break up all that phlegm. And I said, okay, I'm going to try to do that. And he said, and then, Stephanie, sit down and drink the rest of that bottle. That is a true story, and if I could have, I would have. You know, I was just so tired. I was just doing everything I could, and I couldn't birth all these puppies and count Bill's drinks, and I couldn't get Laura to behave, and I couldn't cheer Wes up to believe that he was the best ever. You know, and I had done everything I knew to do because I was still trying to get my insides filled up by the outside. So I was PTA president, and I was the secretary of a service organization, and I was doing all this stuff, and it just wasn't working. And our daughter was breaking all the rules. And she's standing on our roof going, these people are crazy. Somebody come help us. And so Bill and I took her to a psychologist, and we said, would you fix her? She's the problem. And so he met with Bill, and he met with me, and he met with Laura. And then he brought the three of us back together, and he said, I need to tell you that of the three, your daughter is the healthiest. You know, and so Bill was furious. He looked at Bill and he said, I think you might have a drinking problem. He looks at me and he said, all you're doing is crying. And I was. I couldn't tell you I was angry, happy, anything. I cried all the time. And he looked at Laura and he said, you're expressing your feelings. You're doing it inappropriately, but you are expressing your feelings. So Laura's going, yes. You know, and she thinks she's won the lottery. And I, you know, but so now we don't know what to do. But I'm still counting Bill's drinks. Laura is acting out worse, you know. And I am exhausted. I am just exhausted. And now Laura, she's in high school, and she has to go in for jaw surgery. She is a beautiful child when you look at her from the front. But when you turn her sideways, she had a very protruding chin. And so what they had to do, did I say something funny? She really is beautiful. I have pictures. Okay, so she is a beautiful girl. And when she sang, her jaw would lock open. So I've never had anybody laugh like this. It wasn't funny. Wait for the funny part. The funny part's coming. Okay, so what they had to do was to go in and break her jawbone and then scoot the jaw back and wire her mouth shut. I love that part. That was funny. So anyway, I'm at the hospital with Laura, and she's getting ready for this surgery, and I have my first moment of clarity. And I realize that I am doing this marriage and this family all by myself. Bill's passed out at home. And I started paying attention. And then in July of 1985, I watched this man, and I knew he was killing himself with alcohol. His body was getting puffy. He was forgetting things. He'd say something, and then he'd forget what was happening. And I thought, he's going to die. He's going to die. So in July of 1985, I said to him, Bill, I love you too much to watch you kill yourself with alcohol. You either have to move out or you have to get sober. And you can imagine his reaction. I'm getting out of here. And I thought, I don't even care. I just can't watch it anymore. I have two teenage children at home, and I was done. I just loved him too much. That was on a Friday. On a Sunday, Monday, the phone rang, and it's Jerry. And he said, Steph, I understand you kicked Butler out. And I said, Jerry, I think he's dying, and I love him. And he said, well, I'd like to take you to a meeting. Will you go with me to a meeting? And I said, yes, I will. I would have gone anywhere with anybody. I did not know what to do now. I cried all the time. So on July the 24th of 1985, Jerry took me to my very first Al-Anon meeting. And I walked in and all I did was cry. I just sat there and cried. And y'all said, can we have your name? And I go, just keep coming back. It's okay. But you know what I heard at those first few meetings? Alcoholism is a disease. I didn't know that. I had been judging Bill Butler every day and finding him lacking. Just put it down. What's the matter with you? I had no idea that it was a disease. And then I heard y'all say, it's a family disease. And if you have raised sick children, if you have raised children in an alcoholic home, you have raised sick kids. And I thought, oh my gosh, my heart's going to break. And then you said, but you did the best you could with the knowledge that you had at the time. And all I did was cry. And you said, please take the focus off of him and put it on you. Let's get you well. So I started, man. And Bill, 2 weeks later, Bill calls and he said, Steph, I've been out at Willie's and I've been trying to sober myself up and I can't do it. I need help. And so on August the 6th of 1985, Bill began his spiritual journey. And I would have told you that that's all I needed and we would live happily ever after. Okay, uproarious laughter. This, oh my gosh. You know, I'm telling you, life started. But I just thought all we have to do is get this man sober and we're gonna be fine. Well, y'all told me I needed a sponsor. You said, get a hand to hold, by golly. Don't try to do this deal by yourself. And I got a sponsor. Her name was Blanche. I didn't know Blanche had been in Al-Anon 22 years. And she was a sponsor, and she held my hand, and she said, let's talk about some things. First of all, I want to help you change your concept of a higher power. God cannot do bad. He loves you. You can't earn it, and you can't make it go away. It's called grace. It's just free, and it is yours. And so every time I'd go with her and sit, she had a thing where we just had to sit on her couch every week for an hour until I was through with the ninth step. And we did, and we talked, and every time we would talk, and I'd say something about, and she'd say, but you know what? God loves you. God loves you. And she helped me. She held my hand and explained to me about how my job now was to start trying to learn how to clean up my act. Let's get the focus off the alcoholic and let's put it on you. So I'm just as happy as I can be. Bill's got a sponsor. He loves it. This is the joyful part of my journey. We're coming together saying, what'd y'all talk about at your meeting? And I'd say, we talked about acceptance. What'd you talk about? We talked about the 11th step. Oh my gosh. It was a beautiful new way of communicating. And I'm just as happy. And it just feels complete. And then there's Laura. She did not like a drunk dad, but she really didn't like a sober daddy. He was present and he was paying attention. So Laura is now a senior in high school, and she's broken some rule, don't even know what it is, and we've grounded her. So she's been grounded for about a week, and then she comes up and she says, you know, university is playing, she loves baseball. University's playing baseball, can I go to a game? So Bill and I went off and we talked about it and we thought, well, you know, it's a Sunday afternoon. So we go back and we say, yes, Laura, you can, but you need to be home by 6 o'clock tonight. And she says, okay. And she left and she went to that ball game. She did not come home at 6 o'clock on Sunday night. She didn't come home on Monday. She didn't come home on Tuesday. Now, I am a teacher. I've gone back to teaching. I believe that it is God's will for everybody to graduate from high school. So I'm going to make that happen. And so I'm trying to figure out, how can we get her? Where is she? We've got to find her. We've got to get her back in school. She's just got 3 months till graduation, and then I'm done. Let's just get her. You know, and I'm going to the meetings, and y'all are saying things to me like, what would you be doing if this weren't happening? It is happening. It is happening. We need, do I call the cops? We've got to find her. I don't know what to do. And they said, just, you know, pray. And I'd call Blanche, and Blanche would say, Stephanie, do you know that God loves Laura more than you do? And I said, well, that's great, but can we find her? You know, let's just get her through school. That's all. Am I, you know, she's messing up my picture. My picture was, we all graduate on time, and this is a happy family, and we're going to, you know, and she's messing it up, and I don't know what to do. Well, after she had been gone for 3 or 4 days, I was getting in my car at the end of the school day, and I had another moment of clarity. And the voice said to me, if what you're doing isn't working, try something different. And I thought, I've been trying to love that child well, and it's not working. So on Friday of that week, she calls and she said, hey, Mom, I'll be home in a little bit, but I'm going to miss this show, so if you'd tape it for me. Like nothing had happened. And I said, Laura, I love you, and you can't come home. And she said, what'd you say? And I said, I love you, and you can't come home. And I was so peaceful. It was one of those moments where God does for me what I could not do for myself. She is rageful on the end of that phone. And I said, I love you. And I hung up. And I was just standing there, and Bill walked in about that time, and he said, hey, what's going on? And I said, I just heard from Laura. And he went, oh, thank God, where is she? I said, I have no idea. And he said, what? And I said, I told her she couldn't come home. And he said, Steph, did you think that was a good idea? I said, I don't know. But, and then I remembered he had never been to any Al-Anon meetings. And I said, I don't know, but that's what I did. So that's a Friday afternoon. Saturday morning, I am at my Al-Anon meeting going, oh, my God, what have I done? Y'all have got to help me. We've got to go find her. That moment of clarity and that moment where God does for me, it lasted a moment, and I am there. And you know what y'all had the audacity to say to me? One of y'all came up and you patted my hand and you said, did you know you could have a good day anyway? That is not what I wanted to hear. Actually, I had a good day. Laura's gone for a month. Bill's on the phone trying to find a treatment center that will take teenagers with anger management problems. I am praying. Blanche is telling me that's the most powerful thing you can do for a child is you pray. That's your job. You pray. Bill's talking to his sponsor. His sponsor says, you just need to love and accept Laura right where she is. Bill says, we don't know where she is, and that's the problem. So Bill does find a treatment center that will take a teenager with anger management problems. So we find out she spent the night at Cherie, so we call her. And I said, Laura, if you want help, your dad and I found a place. And what do I have to do? And I said, we'll come pick you up. Fine. So we went to get her. Drove her from where we were, Austin, to Denton, Texas. I cried the whole way. My daughter had been living on the streets. She had been beat up in pool halls. She had been sleeping under the slides in parks. She looked horrible. I could not believe that that was my child. And I cried. The only thing I was grateful for was that now I knew where she was. And then we drove home. About 2 or 3 days later, Laura calls and she says, Mom, I need to ask you something. I said, what? And she said, how would you feel about me being an alcoholic? And I said, Laura, any 12-step program you want to latch on is just fine with me. She said, we've been inventorying my drinking, Mom, and I've got a drinking problem. I'm an alcoholic. This past April the 6th, Laura celebrated 28 years of sobriety. Unbelievable. Then we go for family week. And we're sitting there and we're all trying to say how we feel in a safe environment. And Laura gets mad at her daddy and she throws a chair up against the wall and the counselor says, I don't think she's ready to go home yet. We said, no joke. And so he recommended that she go to a halfway house in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So you know what I wanted? Laura was at that halfway house for 4.5 months. I wanted her to graduate from high school. God said, yes, let's do that by correspondence. And then let's give her a 12-step program to live the rest of her life by. I would have missed it. I just needed for her to graduate. Wow. I was limiting God. I was limiting my options. So now she comes back home, and we're standing in these open AA meetings saying the Lord's Prayer, and I'm crying, and Bill and Laura are praying, and it's just beautiful. And and Wes is now a senior in high school. It's time for him to graduate. And so I'm thinking, you know, surely one out of two. And so he's playing football, though. He's still trying to get his insides filled by the outsides. And he gets really, really sick during the two-a-days. And he ends up in the hospital with viral meningitis. He has 104 temperature for 7 days. I called Blanche and I said, what about this God that you've told me can't do bad? Why would God do this to us? And this boy, he's never done anything to anybody. And Blanche said, God didn't do this. Your boy has a virus. God will sustain you no matter what happens. Now, the difference between that hospital stay and the one with Laura, Bill and I prayed together and we cried together. The AAs were there and the Al-Anons were there. We knew nothing to do but to pray for that boy. And he did get well and he did graduate. And I am so grateful. So now Wes is a senior in high school and he's graduating. He goes to the University of Texas. Laura's has got an apartment. She's got a job. And we're just having the best time, and then Bill comes home one day, and he says, how would you like to move to Virginia? And I said, why would we do that? And he said, because I've been flying during, and I'm tired of getting on airplanes, and now that the kids are grown, let's just go to Virginia. And I said, let's go. The reason I said that was because houses in Austin, Texas in 1990 weren't selling. We weren't going anywhere. 2 weeks. Our house sold in 2 weeks. The house down the street had been on the market for a year and a half. And so I am sitting in the middle of our floor crying. And I have different AAs coming up going, what's the matter?
Nothing.
Which is what I always said. And so then Tom, this great, wonderful friend of ours, came up and he said, Stephanie, what is the matter with you? And I said, Tom, I love Bill, and I want to be with him, but I don't think I can go. And he said, why not? And I said, because I can't leave our kids, and I can't leave my sponsor or my home group or my gynecologist or my grocery store. And Tom says to me, Stephanie, you know what you have in Austin, Texas. Why don't you go see what's in Reston, Virginia? And you know what? They have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. They don't do it right, but they have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. I called Blanche. She said, what's the problem? I said, Blanche, it's horrible. It's really bad. She said, why? And I said, they don't mention a higher power. They didn't mention a step. And she said, well, what are you doing? I said, I'm telling them how we do it in Texas. She said, you might want to stop doing that. I did, and the meetings got a whole lot better. So now we are like on a second honeymoon. Oh, my gosh. Bill's got a home group. I've got a home group. He's got a job he loves. I'm teaching in another little school. I mean, we're open our house, and we're having big book studies on Wednesday afternoon. People are coming in having big book studies. I'm telling you, I just think this is the greatest time for us. And the phone rings, and it's Laura. And she says, Mom, I need to tell you something. And I said, what? And she said, I found Wes passed out. And I said, well, bless his little heart. I said, is he sick? She said, Mom, he's drunk. I said, no, honey, he's not drunk. I said, he saw your daddy nearly die of alcoholism. He saw you lose your home. He is not drunk. Mom, Lon took him to his first meeting today. And that was January the 10th of 1991, and Wes began his spiritual journey. So I called Blanche and said, Blanche, how many miracles does one family get? And she said, why? And I said, I think we've used ours all up. And she said, don't limit God. Come on, Steph. So now Wes, when we go back to Austin, Wes is in the AA meeting, and Laura and me and Bill, and they're praying, and I'm crying, but I am so grateful. I am so grateful. And you know what? My tears did not stop after Bill got sober. And I used to say to Blanche, why am I still crying? And she said, you're grieving the loss of a dream. You never expected your family to be held in the grips of alcoholism. You're grieving the loss of a dream. so, but anyway, we're all there together, and I'm still crying. Some of it's joyful, and some of it, I'm sure, is that, oh, my gosh, what we had to go through to get here. So then we're back in Virginia, and the phone rings, and it's Laura, and she says, Mom, I need to tell you something. I said, what? She said, I'm pregnant. I said, no, honey, you're not. She said, Mom, I'm going to have a baby. I said, no, honey, you're not going to have a baby. She said, Mom, I said, Laura, honey, first you have the wedding, then you have the baby. We did not have a wedding. You are not having a baby. She said, Mom, do you want me to have an abortion? I said, no. She said, do you want me to give it up for adoption? I said, no. And she said, what do you want, Ma? I said, I don't want you to be pregnant. Blanche said I was opting for one of my unavailable choices. She messed up my picture. Now, she and this guy had been together for 5 years, but they had broken up, and they weren't going to get married. They weren't, and I was just horrified. So I didn't tell anybody. It didn't look right. It messed up my picture. So I kept it a secret. And one Wednesday night after our big book meeting, George and Rita are leaving. I said, Rita, come here. I need to tell you something. She said, what? And I said, it's bad. It's really, really bad. She said, what? I said, it's bad, Rita. She said, what, Stephanie? I said, Laura's going to have a baby. And she said, no. I said, no, Rita, you don't understand. It's really bad. And she looked at me and she said, what? And I said, she didn't have a wedding. And Rita said, isn't it sad that you have to look at something and judge it and find it lacking? Can't you just say it's what is? It's just what is. On June the 6th of 1992, the most beautiful baby girl you have ever seen was born. Her name is Stephanie Grace. I would have missed it because it didn't look right. I was there. Bill was there. Sober. Wes was there sober. I was crying. But it was the happiest day of my life. I did not know what being a grandparent was about. The most beautiful baby. We didn't need a marriage license. We didn't need a piece of paper. We needed to love that child. Oh my gosh, my heart was so full. People would say to me, are you okay? And I go, I'm grandma. I was just thrilled to death. So now I need to tell you a little story about Grace. She was in second grade, and the teacher wanted everybody to introduce themselves. My Grace stands up, and she says, my name is Grace. I'm an alcoholic, and I've got 7 years of sobriety. Grace had been going to meetings since before she was born. She never heard anybody introduce themselves any other way. And the teacher said, what'd you say? And Grace is her mother's daughter, so she puts her little hands on her hips. She said, did you hear what I said? I'm alcoholic. So the teacher had to call Laura, and Laura said, no, I'm the alcoholic. And the teacher went, what? And Laura said, no, I'm sober. It's okay. Anyway, what a beautiful, oh my gosh, she's beautiful. I would have missed it because it did not look right. The happiest day of my life because I judged it and found it lacking. What a shame. What a shame. Well, Grace is 23 years old now, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about her at the end of my story, but wow, what a kid. She has a place in my heart, nobody else. It is just special for that, well, now young lady. I adore her. So in 1993, I get a call from San Antonio, and they tell me that my daddy had an abdominal aneurysm. It had ruptured, and he had died instantly. And I was devastated. I loved my daddy. But I'll tell you what, as sad as I was, that's how grateful I was that I had been in a 12-step program. I had done a 9-step with my daddy. Everything was clean and clear. I had not one regret, not one. Now I'm going to tell you the part of my story that I wish I did not have to share. In February of 1994, With 8.5 years of sobriety, Bill Butler could not live with his humanness, and he committed suicide. Bill suffered from depression. He was feeling so good, he took himself off of his antidepressants. I need for you to hear something. AA works. Bill cherished his sobriety. Depression is an illness, and if it goes untreated, it will kill you. He thought he was fine. I went to a psychiatrist and said, how? What? Why? We have been together for 33 years. How? And he said it was a moment of insanity. In one instant, Bill, that was it for him. He was done. The hardest thing I've ever had to do was to call our children. And Laura said, Mama, Daddy loved you too much. He wouldn't go off and leave you. And Wes said, Mama, Daddy loved you. Daddy loved you, Mama. It's not about love. It's about a disease. If it doesn't get treated, it will kill you. We had been out to dinner in the grocery store the night before. I did not know. He did not let me know. It took every meeting I've ever been to, every hug I've ever gotten, every piece of literature I've ever read, to be able to put one foot in front of the other. How? How? Why? There's no answers for all the whys. None. None. The people in Virginia wanted to have a service for him, and we did. My teachers came and they said, who are all these people? She said, you've lived here 4 years, I've lived here 20, I don't know this many. I said, this is my family. You told me that I would never have to do anything alone again. And you stood by your word. You held my hand through the whole thing. We brought him back to Texas. Had a beautiful graveside service for him. Blanche told me that I was going to need some outside help. She said, you know, you've got the Al-Anon program and it's going to help you, but this is bigger. This is big. So she suggested I get a counselor, and I did. I got a beautiful lady named Nancy, and she sat with me 2 and 3 times a week for a year. And she said, I need to tell you something, Stephanie. You've been traumatized. She said, when something happens in one instant and changes your life and it will never be the same again, that's called trauma. It's different than grief. Grief is sad and grief is hard. Trauma is in one instant. It's different. Nancy helped me so much. And the children wanted me to come back home, and I said, I can't. I have a job. This is what I'm going to do. When this happened, there was a lady that had been sitting in Al-Anon meetings with me, and her name was Dawn. And Dawn knew pain. And she called, and she said, if there's anything I can do. And I can't tell you how many times I went and sat on her couch, and I cried. And she just held me. She became my Virginia sponsor. There wasn't anything. Here's the thing that's the most amazing to me. 2 years after Bill died, I walked into the house and I said, he's not coming back. It took 2 years for me to get the information from my head to my heart. He's not coming back. And I called Laura and I said, sweetie, I think I'm coming home. And she went, oh, Mom, yes. And so I didn't know this. Bill was a great employee and he had money and they had money. We had never had money. But when he died, there's this lump of money, didn't know what to do with it. But I gave away some furniture, sold some furniture, and the teachers in Virginia said, "Where are you going? Back to Austin?" I said, "No, it's gotten too big." I said, "I'll tell you what I've missed since I've been in Virginia. You don't get to see sunsets because the trees are so tall." I didn't know it, but I love the water. I want to be near water. And I said, "And I've never lived in a new house before. It'd be really nice if I had a new house." And it was as if God said, "Sure, here you go." I felt as if God said, "I am so sorry. I'm so sorry." He loved Bill. So anyway, give away all this furniture, and I go down, I find a new house. It sits on the Lake LBJ, and the sun sets over Packsaddle Mountain right out my back door, and it's a brand new house, and oh my gosh, we're wonderful. And so I called the man that I had invested all this money with, and I said, "Breeze, please send the money down to Texas so I have eye-to-eye contact." And he said, "Will do." And we waited, and the money didn't come. And then I'd call him and say, "Breeze, I'm with Merrill Lynch now, and I need you to send the money down here." And he'd say, "It's on its way." And it didn't come. Bruce stole almost $300,000. It's all gone. It felt like another death in the family. I did not now know what to do. I just cried more all the time. I don't know what you do when you don't have any money and you've bought a new house. I don't know how you do that. And so I cried. But I did what you AAs told me to do. You told me to pray for Bruce. And I did. It was real hard to say his name, but I did. I want you to know I prayed for Bruce this morning. I have been praying for him almost every day because I had to get rid of a knot in my stomach. I didn't understand how you could do that to somebody like me. My grief was just too big, and I couldn't believe it. So they wanted me to press charges, and I did. And Bruce went to prison for 2 years. That was the maximum they could give him. And they ordered him to make restitution. And every once in a while, I get a check. Every once in a while, a little bit. Anyway, Laura said, "Mom, you're going to be really dead by the time he pays this off." But let me tell you something. It's not about money. It's not about money. Because I said, "God, I've done the footwork. I did what I needed to do." And you know what God did? He built a school, an elementary school, 7 minutes from my house, and they needed a first grade teacher. Oh my gosh. And so I'm so excited. I don't know what to do. I'm going to teach school. And I get my first paycheck, and I open it, and it's not enough for a house payment. And I called Laura, and she said, "Mom, now what are you going to do?" I said, "I don't know. I did what I was supposed to do. I guess it's, you know, not about money. God's going to take care of it." And I'm still in that house. Here I am, 19 years later. I still live in that house, and I'm fine. Really fine. There's no sign. You have to come see it in action. So I am teaching school, and I love these children. Now, I have not been able. You know what? If Bruce hadn't taken that money, you want to know what? I would have missed Rosie. I would have missed Loki. I would have missed John. I can't write him a thank you note yet. But if it hadn't been for that money to be gone, I would not have been able to teach school with these little people. And it is my passion. I love teaching school. And I've been fine. It really is a God thing. It has to be. Of my own power, I am not it. So Dawn and I have been meeting, and then Blanche and I are meeting, and now Blanche is in an accident. She has a car accident, and she's in the hospital about an hour and a half from me. And I have a little red Oldsmobile, and sometimes it goes and sometimes it doesn't. It's got over 100,000 miles on it, and sometimes you just have to sit and wait for it to start again. And so I've been asking people, how do you buy a new car when you don't have any money? I don't know how you buy a car. And so Blanche was entering sweepstakes for me. She said, "I'm going to get you a red Jeep." And I said, "That would be great." Anyway, so Blanche is in the hospital, and I go see her every weekend. I'm teaching school, and then I drive to Temple to see her. And then I'm back teaching school again. Well, I get a call from her daughter, and she says, "If you want to say goodbye to my mom, you better hurry." Blanche does not sustain, cannot sustain her injuries, and she's not going to make it. So I get in that little red car, and I said, you know, God, I didn't get to say goodbye to Bill, and I didn't get to say goodbye to my daddy. Please let me say goodbye to Blanche. And I was holding her hand when she took her last breath. And I said, I hope you can see the lives that you've touched because you were willing to share. They had a memorial service for Blanche, and they asked me to say a few things. And I said, okay. And Laura called that morning, and she said, Mom, you're going to tell them how important Blanche was to our family, aren't you? I said, Laura, you hated Blanche. She said, Mama, she didn't want you to accept unacceptable behavior. She wanted you to teach me that there were consequences for my choices. She said, if it hadn't been for Blanche, I might not be alive today. And I could share that. So after Blanche had been gone for a couple or 3 months, I get a call from her daughter, and she said, Stephanie, I need to tell you something. I had a visit from Mom last night. I went, okay. And she said, she's worried about your transportation. I said, Ellen, really? She said, she wants you to have her car. I said, Ellen, I could never take Blanche's car. She says, well, then you're going to have to argue with my mother and God. Blanche was driving a brand new Cadillac. Had 23,000 miles on it, and it was all paid for. Oh, my gosh. Every time I got in that car, I felt loved and hugged. And I drove that car for 10 years until it had over 150,000 miles on it. I took it to the car dealership, and I had to trade it in, and I'm standing there crying. And the guy said, ma'am, it's just a car. And I went, no, it's not. So after Blanche died, Dawn and I became, she's just my constant. I'm telling you, she and I were in Reston together. I moved back to Texas. She moved to Chicago. Dawn is the most beautiful, spiritual, connected person I have in my life. She has held my hand through everything, and she's there. I adore that woman. She says things to me like, are you in present time? I'm never in present time. She said, because if you're in present time, you're okay. And then she says to me, don't we serve an awesome God? Isn't this amazing? She said, let's just say thank you. And Blanche taught me this. She said, instead of begging, God, please take care of Laura, please take care of it. Instead of doing that, I'm supposed to say thank you, God, ahead of time. Thank you, God, for taking care of my kids. Thank you, God. So now I need to get you up to date real quickly. let's see. Where am I going to start with this now? Well, here's the... Well, one little thing. My mother, bless her heart, had... she had dementia and a form of Alzheimer's. And so she needed to have somebody take care of her. So my brother and I split the caretaking. And so every other weekend, I drove to San Antonio for 5 years to take care of my mom. And every time Friday afternoon I'd finish teaching, I'd jump in the car, drive to San Antonio. I would call Dawn, and I'd say, Dawn, tell me all the Al-Anon you know. And so she would say, you're just being of service. You need nothing. You go there with a full cup, remember? You need nothing. And that's how I went to San Antonio. I needed nothing. I'm just going to be of service. That's all. And so my mother died about a year and a half ago, and we were all with her. And once again, I had no regrets. I was of service to my mother, and she knew I loved her. I am so grateful for that time. At the time, I thought, I can't keep going every other weekend and teach first grade, and oh my gosh, but I did. And I'm grateful that I did. So then last May, not this past May, but a year ago, it was time for me to stop teaching. 70 years old, arthritis in my knees, time to sit down. I didn't want to do it. So I cried. Why? I mean, it was like, you know, really, this was my passion. This is my passion. I love these six-year-olds. I love them. And I wouldn't have missed it for the world. And I didn't know what I was going to do with me after I quit. You know, and I knew that, you know, even my daughter especially, she'd say, Mama, sit down. Really, it's been long enough. And you know what they did? They replaced me with a 23-year-old. I shared that at a meeting, and one of my Al-Anon buddies said, how many did it take? Five. No. Wonderful woman, wonderful girls. She's got energy. She can do it. But I want you to know I went through another grief process. One hand, I am so grateful that I could do my passion for 34 years. Oh my gosh, the lives that have walked across my heart. I am so grateful. And then the sadness that I can't do it anymore. So I was in a workshop in Kansas one time, and they were talking about grieving the loss of your youth. And that's what it was. I'm just 70. What can I tell you? And when you're 70, it's really hard to stand on your feet all day with six-year-olds. And they needed somebody that could handle all that. So then it was like, what am I going to do? And God says, don't worry about it. You know, we got you covered. Got your back. And so I am sponsoring people. And I am in Alaska. And my cup is full. Now, that's my life today. I have not a I am so blessed, I cannot even tell you. I have nothing that I need today. Nothing that I need. This God that has just poured it out on me. Just poured it out on me. So, here's what I need to tell you. Laura Janice, she's been sober 28 years. She married Brooks 20 years ago. Lasted for a while. Then they got a divorce and they each married other people. And now they're back together again. Only in AA, right? And so they got married almost 2 years ago. And so they're back together again. And Brooks has been sober about 30 years, I think. And so they're just as happy as they can be. And he's got grandchildren. And they brought them to the house. And they're all there this weekend while I'm up here, which is really probably a blessing. And then I need to tell you about Wes. Wes got sober in 1991, and he stayed sober for a while. And then his dad's death took him out. He didn't know what to do with it. And I don't think he processed it. That's my opinion. And so Wes went to Wyoming and started working on a ranch. And while he was in Wyoming, he was on a horse. The horse threw him, and he fell on top of him. And Wes broke his back. So Wes got hooked on Oxycontin. And so he was back in Texas, but he could never get on a horse again, and he loved riding horses. But now Wes is hooked on Oxycontin. So Laura and Wes's best friend do an intervention, take him, Wes gets clean. So Wes, even though he had AA for a while, now he's got AA again. But you know what? One day, a little over a year ago, he called and he said, Mom, let's do lunch. And I said, okay. So I went to Austin, and he's sitting there, and he says, I need to tell you that I started drinking again. And I said, okay. And he said, are you not upset about that? And I said, Wes, I love you. And you know what you do is what you do. And if you don't hurt yourself or anybody else, it's just your business. And he was dumbfounded. You're not upset, Mom? And I wanted to say, after all these years in Al-Anon, wouldn't you think I could let you live your life without commentary? And that's what I did. I love that boy unconditionally. I love him. I love Laura. Let me tell you about Laura. We used to call her the daughter from hell. And she was. And then Blanche says to me, you've got to stop saying that because she's going to act it out. I said, she already is. Today, all those years ago, I wanted Laura to be more like me. Today, I want to be just like Laura. I adore that girl. She is amazing. We tell each other all the time how much we love each other. She is amazing. Now, her daughter, Grace, my granddaughter, about a month ago, 2 months ago, was found on the streets in Corpus Christi, Texas. And Grace had been using some drugs. And so she ended up in a rehab. And I'm saying things like, how did that happen? She had two sober parents. You know what? What do y'all say in the big book? Knowledge availed us nothing. So Grace had to do her deal. Today,
Grace has about 62 days of sobriety. She is in a sober living house in Kerrville, Texas. Never would have planned that for her. I thought she was going to get out scot-free.
Yeah.
What was I thinking? It's a family disease. It's a family disease. So, I have these beautiful granddaughters. Wes also got married and gave me a granddaughter. She'll be 9 years old tomorrow. And so, but Wes is single. Laura's married to Brooks. Grace is in a sober living house. I am in Alaska with people that have loved me for an hour and sat patiently and listened to me. Blanche used to say, if you want to show somebody that you love them, just listen. That's all you have to do. You don't have to fix them. Just listen. And you've done that for me this morning, and I thank you.